Alright, everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and this is the Grim Rant Show! We've got plenty of articles, but let's go ahead and thank our sponsors! SpinningRobotPussy.com! It's only a couple days till Valentine's Day. What the hell are you people waiting for? You should have got an SRP months ago when we announced it. If you don't have one now, you're not going to have another shot. So hurry up and order your spinning robot pussy today. Don't forget about the Follow Me Eyes and the Waifu Goo. So we want to thank Revy for that one. All right, so what do I have as far as announcements? Not a whole lot. We're in the middle of Waifu Month right now. As you guys have noticed, a lot of our content has changed. And it will change again next month as well, so, you know, be on the lookout for that. I am trying to bring you something that a lot of people do enjoy quite a bit, and I enjoy playing as well, so we're going to give you that, and I hope you'll enjoy that, because we don't have Being a Dick. We do that on Tuesdays now, AVN Tuesdays. However, I do have something similar that I think you guys, well, I know you guys like, because I've looked at the fucking hits. And you're definitely going to get more of it, because I like it, and I just can't wait till we get into the next chapter of that series. Spoilers, spoilers, just a little bit. Okay, so, let's see. Not any other big announcements, nothing that I can think of right off the top of my head, nothing that's just like, oh yeah. Maybe some surprises coming soon that I know about, and you'll find out later, because that's how surprises work. But, alright, enough of my jabbering. Let's go ahead and get started. So we have an article, a little older article, but I still think it's useful. This is from Intellectual Takeout. And, hold on, let me turn this... Oh, it is down. I'll turn it down a little more. There we go. I mean, you guys probably couldn't tell, but I could. It felt like I was screaming over the music here. But anyway, Intellectual Takeout. Former teacher, 7 ways schools are creating empty children. Now this is interesting. In the early 1990s, New York Teacher of the Year John Taylor Gatto threw in the towel on teaching with his famous "I quit, I think" letter to the Wall Street Journal. Gatto's reason for quitting was simple. He could no longer justify teaching a curriculum of confusion, class position, arbitrary justice, vulgarity, rudeness, disrespect for privacy, indifference to quality, and utter dependency. Such a system, Gatto opined, was turning our children into mindless robots. In his book, The Underground History of American Education, Gatto lists 15 ways the education system can create empty children. 7 of them are below. Would you agree that schools and society in general have successfully implemented these steps? If so, how can we reverse the trend and raise vibrant, imaginative, and knowledgeable children? That's not what the system wants. Number 1. Keep children under surveillance every minute from dawn to dusk. Give no private space or time. Fill time with collective activities. Record behavior quantitatively. 2. Addict the young to machinery and electronic displays. Teach that these are desirable to recreation and learning both. 3. Remove as much private ritual as possible from young lives, such as the rituals of food preparation and family dining. Family dining. Very important to get that there. Number 4. Grade, evaluate, and assess children constantly and publicly. Begin early. Make sure everyone knows his or her rank. 5. Honor the highly graded. Keep grading in the real-world accomplishment as strictly separate as possible so that a false meritocracy dependent on the support of authority to continue is created. Push the most independent kids to the margin. Do not tolerate real argument. Number 6. Forbid the efficient transmission of useful knowledge, such as how to build a house, repair a car, or make a dress. Number 7. Remove all significant functions from home and family life except its role as dormitory and casual companionship. Make parents unpaid agents of the state. Recruit them into partnerships to monitor the conformity of children to an official agenda. This article was first published in 2016, but it has been republished because it is important. Do you think that schools are doing this? I do! Let's see here. I've got a list here. Don't know how many of these we'll be able to do. Yeah, there's quite a few of these here. Wow. So somebody sent me an entire list of social media feuds that escalated to offline murders. Good Lord. We'll just read a few of these. How about that? The internet can often seem harmless with its never-ending supply of cat videos, memes, and other distractions. But there is a dark side to all this connectivity. In some cases, social media-inspired online fights resulted in offline death. Whether those killings were committed by people who couldn't bear being humiliated publicly or they simply snapped, these murders caused by social media are chilling. Some social media feuds that led to murder were sparked by fights about lovers, online threats, or even a simple $20 debt. Wow. Tragically, the victims in these cases were often very young, and many were teenagers. The jealousy and hurt egos of the individuals engaging in online behaviors that turn murderous make these stories all the more harrowing. Okay. A Facebook fight becomes an offline stabbing. A fight about a boy on Facebook led a 16-year-old to kill her rival in Scranton, Pennsylvania in 2016. Kathleen Boyer sparred with Kayla Van Wert, the mother of her lover's son, on social media. The two agreed to meet, but during the fight, Boyer stabbed Van Wert. She later died at a hospital. After the fight, Boyer took to Facebook again to say that she had no remorse for the stabbing. She was eventually arrested and charged with homicide. Here's another one. Facebook threats a CIA conspiracy in a brutal murder. After moving to Mountain City, Tennessee and struggling to make friends, Janelle Potter finally seemed to settle into a group that she fit in with. But her Facebook friend, Billie Jean, not my lover, by the way, Hayworth, was jealous that Potter had a crush on her boyfriend and father of her child, Billy Payne. Not to be confused with Billy Zane. An online battle broke out, who Potter and Payne's cousin Jamie Curd, not Jamie Curtis, who also happened to be sleeping with Potter, pitted against his cousin and Hayworth. Eventually, the Facebook threats and arguments ended when Potter, Hayworth, and Payne unfriended each other. The fight was far from resolved, though. On January 31st of 2012, police found Hayworth and Payne shot in the head with Payne's throat cut. The couple's child was in Hayworth's arms alive. A police investigation led to the arrest of Potter's father, Marvin. In an interrogation, he told police a CIA agent told him to commit the crimes. Police later discovered that the agent was really his daughter, who used a fake online identity to provoke her father into committing the murders. The authorities arrested Potter and her mother, Barbara, for making Marvin murder Hayworth and Payne. Potter's lover, Curd, was also charged for his role in the killings and was sentenced to 25 years in prison. Potter and her mother were given life in prison, and Marvin received a double sentence. Wow. Crazy stuff. Crazy stuff. Let's see if we can find something. All right. Kayla Henriquez stabbed her friend Kamisha Richards. Or maybe it's Kayla Henriquez. Kayla Henriquez stabbed her friend Kamisha Richards in New York City after they fought on Facebook over a $20 debt. Well, sounds like German Shepherds for you. In February of 2011, Richards gave Henriquez the money to buy diapers, milk, and other essentials for her baby. When Richards asked for her money back, the two began arguing over Facebook. When the two met in person, the fight quickly escalated. Richards threatened Henriquez with a pair of scissors, while Henriquez armed herself with a knife. Ultimately, Henriquez killed Richards with a single blow. Henriquez is arrested and charged with second-degree murder. She pleaded guilty and was sentenced for 15 years in prison. Damn. Twitter insults result in a man being shot to death. In 2009, childhood friends Quayne Dancy and Jemeg Blake began arguing over a girl in Harlem. They started trading insults on Twitter, and by December the 1st of 2010, things escalated. Their fight ended with Dancy being fatally shot in the neck by Blake. Good Lord. A gun battle erupts after a Facebook feud. On June the 20th of 2015, a Facebook fight led to a gun battle that left a man dead in Cincinnati. Police said that Nikalen Williams and Daceman Latham traded keyboards for pistols after one of the men responded to a comment about a girl saying, "Why don't you come up and fight?" Latham found Williams and opened fire on him and a group of people. Latham was arrested in connection with the shooting. Man, it's even gone into gang violence. Let's see. A Twitter fight escalates to gang violence. Street gangs have been battling for years, but Twitter gives them a new medium with which to taunt each other. User goes by Bosco and Jomo Adola Zambia traded insults on the social media site. After Bosco was beaten by Zambia and other gang members, Zambia was shot and killed while driving his car November the 2nd, 2011. So that's just some of the weird feuds that people can have on social media that end up in murder. Yeah, pretty crazy, right? Okay, so what have we got next? Ah, yes. If it isn't the woman, 24, who claims she has had multiple alien encounters. I wonder how many of those were sexual. Reveals what it's like to communicate with extraterrestrials. 24-year-old woman who claims she has experienced multiple alien encounters has recounted what it is like to communicate with extraterrestrials. Ashley Beck from Brooklyn, New York has shared details of her alleged encounters, from how the aliens tracked her to the eerie feeling that something was always watching her. Speaking to We're All Insane podcast host Devorah Roloff, Ashley described the weird incident she had with the beings while living in North Carolina. And the 24-year-old dished on what the aliens looked like and why she was convinced they were following her. Okay, let's see. She began by explaining that her stepdad was in the military, She began by explaining that her stepdad was in the military, so in 05, she and her family moved to California, North Carolina, not California, I don't even know where that came from, to live near a military base. I was never used to that much land, yeah, and I always felt like something was just not right. You know how sometimes a fire alarm casts a shadow? I always felt something was just like watching me all the time, Ashley said. She explained the alien encounters began occurring when she was about 12 years old. The now 24-year-old said the first incident that made her raise an eyebrow was after a random fire outside her house. It wasn't really spreading, and we were the only ones with a fence, and you would think that it would spread to the fence, but nothing spread. It was kind of like contained in that one area, she said. I wasn't allowed to go outside because I had to watch my brother, but I had a perfect view of our backyard from our two windows, and it was literally like a huge circle. She noted that they could never figure out why the fire started, but they brushed it off as a weird event, didn't pay much attention to it. However, 2 months later, other odd occurrences began to pile up. She added, maybe 2 months later, I'm having these weird feelings again, like something's not right. Ashley said the second incident occurred in her bedroom, adding that her bed faced the window and she had a perfect view of a tree while laying down. The hairstylist said she often saw figures when she closed her eyes and was too afraid to fall asleep. She explained, I'd close my eyes and I'd see these two little black figures, almost like children, running from the tree that wasn't cut down through the bushes, over the fence, down the fence, through my backyard and up my house. I opened my eyes before they would get to me and had almost like a drone view, and I played this game with myself, like how many times I can close and open my eyes before they get me, but it came to a time where I just got too tired and couldn't keep my eyes open anymore, so I ended up was falling asleep. That's what it says here, guys. But I wouldn't sleep for a good 3 months. She later revealed that she would soon see black figures in her room, however didn't tell her mom or anyone else about the incidents because she didn't want them to think she was making things up. And Ashley kept the secret to herself until one night in July when the aliens made themselves clear to her family and her best friend. The 24-year-old said that she and her best friend Lindsay were swimming one night when they saw a flutter of red, green, and blue lights in the sky. Christmas? 4th of July? I don't know. We go running inside like, oh my god, there's aliens outside, and my mom thinks I'm crazy. She thinks I'm overreacting, she said. However, Lindsay and Ashley were so certain about what they had just seen, and Ashley's mom grabbed her gun and went outside. My mom's like, I saw that. So we're like, yeah, told you so. And she's like, Ashley, go get my camera. However, by the time Ashley had ran inside and grabbed her mom's camera, the lights were gone. But then the girls quickly saw a ship emerge in the sky. She added, I freeze. My mom has to drag me inside. We're rallying up everybody. We're like, get in the house. Get in the house right now. So we run upstairs in my mom's room and lock ourselves in. Sounds like fucking sightings. That one movie. I remember that one. Where the aliens were coming down to Earth and everybody had to lock themselves up in their house or they were scared. I remember that movie. We are in the bedroom and we keep peeking out the window and it's still there, and then all of a sudden the house shakes like so hard, like an earthquake. It shakes so hard that the picture falls off the wall and then it's gone. It's gone. Ashley's mom immediately picked up the phone and called her husband. However, without seeing it with his own eyes, he didn't believe her. After the house stopped shaking, Ashley's brother comes running down the hall screaming because there's a black figure in his room. They entered the house, she said. Just as quickly as it appeared, the black figure was gone. By the next day, the family attempted to get the bizarre incident out of their mind. Just before dinner, Ashley and Lindsay decided to go for a run to clear their heads. However, the presence of extraterrestrials was quickly made clear. It's hazy, the sun is setting, and we're going up, and we come across this old construction that's always there, and all of a sudden it's like a piercing sound in my ear, she recalled. I'm like, what the hell? Ow, it hurts so bad. I lose some of my hearing in my ear at the time. It goes into my ear, into my jaw, and down my neck. It's just this excruciating pain. The two girls rushed home and told their families about what just had occurred, but their families brushed it off. After dinner, the two girls went back outside to get some fresh air, but while there, they once again saw the ship. So we run back inside and we try to go grab her parents, and by the time we get outside, it's gone again, she said. It had to be maybe like 30 to 45 seconds, but by the time they got to the ground and they got outside, they were like, why don't we ever see it? How come it's just you two only seeing this stuff? But I think that was actually like the last time it ever like showed itself again. After that last incident, Ashley and her family moved, and she has never had any other experiences with aliens. She added she thought that the house they lived in where the encounters occurred was tainted. The 24-year-old said she thought the aliens wanted her to get off their land. They were probably trying to rattle it to see if they could move it off my yard, she said. Speaking about the beings, she added, I feel like they want to make themselves known to people, that they want to see them. It's interesting. Let's see. Yeah, the main comment here, I feel like reading that is just halved my IQ. Yeah, I do like what Pilot says. Like, it may have been interesting, like if there had been like some other detail like or conclusion like. And I was like, oh my god, it's like an alien. And Ashley was like, yeah. And then we saw like this dark like shape of like an alien, like Jesus Christ already, like. Never do drugs, kids. This is what happens. Alright, so we have some interesting things here. A man has used Tinder to talk to he hasn't used Tinder. He's on Tinder, but Here's where the interesting thing happens, guys. Man uses AI to talk to 5,000 women on Tinder and finds a wife. Bet she'll divorce him in like a month. At some point, the project wrote me a recommendation that maybe it's time to propose to Karina. Instead of going through the tedious process of actually interacting with women, Moscow resident Alexander Zadan programmed OpenAI's GPT large language models to talk to well over 5,000 women on his behalf. Zadan went as far as to have it schedule in real life dates with matches and filter out profiles that showed women posing with alcohol, as Gizmodo reports. Wow. Lo and behold, his efforts appear to have paid off. Zadan found his wife, Karina Voloshkova. An apparent proof that his bizarre and extremely 2024 method of finding love in the age of AI can actually work. If the happy couple isn't making the whole thing up for clout, that is. It's true. The pair first matched in December in 2022. Unbeknownst to Voloshkova, she was actually chatting with an AI for the first few months into their relationship, according to Gizmodo. Gradually, Zadan took over for his AI Romeo, and the two started seeing each other in person. Per the report, Voloshkova wasn't angry but just shocked when she found out she was talking to ChatGPT, not a human. Bafflingly, Zadan said it wasn't even his idea to eventually get married. At some point, the project wrote me a recommendation that maybe it's time to propose to Karina, he told Gizmodo. Karina said she wanted to go to a wedding, but ChatGPT thought she'd prefer attending her own, he added. I took the advice and she said yes. When Gizmodo asked about Zadan's unconventional way of dating, Voloshkova had an interesting answer. He spent a lot of time personalizing these prompts for me, so it's okay when used in a rational way, she said. According to the pair, it's a real deal. I think the most important thing is our real-life connection, which is great, Veloshkova told Gizmodo. I don't know. Sounds a little far-fetched for me. Opinion! AI can replace the localizers, but the issues run deeper. Localization discourse has taken some dramatic turns over the past few months. Critics have been emboldened by the growing normalization of using AI in translation work, especially in commercial products. Meanwhile, its defenders have had an easier time deflecting criticism by defending themselves with politics instead of addressing the behavior of localizers. How did it get this bad? What happened? For some perspective, when things kicked off with the ancient Magus Bride, Magus Bride rather, announcing they would do simulpub releases with the power of AI technology with a human editor to quickly translate chapters into English. The existence of a human editor basically meant little would change from a localization standpoint anyways, but this was a flashpoint for both sides of the discourse. Localization critics are seeing this as a win because machine translation should be more faithful to the original, and perhaps even with the human editor, diminishing the amount of people needed for localization might allow Japanese companies to keep such roles in-house, such as what Kadokawa has begun to do. Meanwhile, localization defenders see this as another example of AI taking over creative jobs, because of course they do, with some localizers seeing themselves as writers and authors unto themselves. You're not. You're not. Quit fucking thinking that you are the goddamn writer and author of the work. You're not. You're localizing it for an audience. You didn't create the fucking work. Which is an entirely different debate representative of current localization discourse being constant stream of deflection and idiocy. Where are we now? When I say deflection on both sides, I'm referring to two different things. First, there's the AI versus human creativity debate, which is only secondary to the issue of localizers changing context and censoring content. Second, localization discourse has become the latest vector of attack in partisan culture war chicanery. What critics say is happening is happening. Localizers can and have abused their positions to push their political positions and alter the meaning of the content they're entrusted with. It's not happening, and if it is, that's a good thing. Quotation marks. Localization is inevitably going to change some things. Localization defenders are 100% correct in that Japanese can be difficult to translate one for one, especially with cultural niche references, puns, and jokes. I wrote an article saying that all of those are easy to look up. Like, I think you can look up a lot of that stuff just on Google, honestly. It's, you're like, okay, well, I don't understand what they mean when they say this. So look it up. Oh, that's what they mean. And then you have more cultural knowledge of Japan than you did before you looked it up, right? I mean, it's a win-win. You learn more about Japan, and you understand the jokes in the anime. Meanwhile, critics are also right that a lot of other things can probably be safely machine-translated. Yes! The problem is localization defenders have been defending seemingly ideologically... motivated changes as a simple quirk of the profession. This obfuscates the conversation because it allows them to put simple style choices on the same level as borderline censorship or outright changing of context. When you can equate the most egregious changes to the minor stylistic changes of localization work, it becomes easy to shut down critics as ideologically motivated themselves, which some of them are. Losing sight of the issue. Like I said previously, localization has become a culture war proxy, with each side becoming a shorthand for a whole list of partisan positions. This is one of the reasons why the conversation goes nowhere. The battle lines have been drawn, and anyone touching this issue is being forced to take a side, and neither one is going to budge or convince the other because of all the irrelevant issues attached to it. This is especially true for localization critics. The translation is woke! The issue isn't when the translation is woke. The issue is when the translation is intentionally wrong. Complaining that it's woke might be a convenient way to identify what some critics perceive as the issue, but it detracts from the problem identified earlier. Localizers are abusing their positions to push an agenda. It shouldn't matter what the agenda is. By turning the issue of bad localizations into a political one, it's playing into their hands. There's people center and left of center who have a problem with localizers advocating for the censorship of content. I'm one of them, he says in parentheses. But by hitching your culture war wagon to it, you just reinforce the belief that caring about censorship and localization is a right versus left issue instead of an issue that all fans should care about. So where do we go from here? With things proceeding the way they are, AI will probably become more prevalent in translation and localization, and that may be a win for localization critics. I don't think it's an ideal win, but I also don't really have any sympathy for the people who brought this on themselves. It will also be a win for the wrong reasons. Western publishers aren't suddenly gaining integrity. AI is cheap, and that's why it'll work. The localization industry is seemingly dominated by underpaid individuals who persist because it gives them a platform to put their opinions. True! The only thing cheaper at this point is AI, and the only thing that would attract better localizers is more pay. I can tell you which one a company will choose. AI, all the time. If localizers really want to save their job and their image as professionals, then the good ones need to become more outspoken and more transparent about what changes are made and why, especially when called out. There's room for understanding. Sometimes it's the Western publisher or platform holder dictating changes. Sometimes a slang term really is an accurate translation. But if no one is willing to act in good faith on either side, then nothing will change. New York Post. My husband cheated on me with my mom, and that's not even the worst part. It's the mother of all betrayals. Mum's the word for most unfaithful folks entangled in an extramarital affair with a hot young fling. I almost said filly. But this double-crossed divorcee says her chubbing, cheating hubby went with mom instead. Sorry, I have my glasses off because my eyes are fucking killing me right now. This is a story about how I found out about my husband at the time and my mom having an affair. Interior designer Lacey Jane from Indianapolis, Indiana, revealed to a stunned cyber audience of over 2.7 million TikTok viewers. The backstab blonde explained that the reprehensible hanky-panky between her man and her mom occurred 14 years ago, shortly after she'd given birth to her daughter and was stricken with severe health issues. Jane did not immediately respond to the post's request for a comment. My mom was living with us. She was staying down in the basement, she said in the cringeworthy clip. But after several months, she ended up renting a house that was like a block away from us, and my husband and her carpooled to work together. The millennial admitted that she was suspicious of the unlikely pair's connection. The mounting concern sparked a fiery contention with her spouse, who Jane chose not to name for privacy purposes, causing them to separate. He moved into the mother's rental property, and mom moved in with Jane and her newborn. While she was living with me, we started to get close, confessed the deceived darling. She started telling me about all these times he was cheating on me with all these different women. And she made me promise not to tell him that I heard it from her, added Jane, who initially agreed to protect her mother amid their marital mayhem. However, she was ultimately too infuriated by the heartbreaking bombshell to keep it under wraps. I got in my car, sped out of there, and I went to go confront him, she recalled. I said, hey, mom said that you've been cheating on me this entire time, remembered Jane. And he looked me square in the eyes and he said, well, why don't she tell you what her and I have been doing? Well, it had to happen in the South. Well, why don't she tell you what her and I have been doing? The crestfallen Jane immediately returned home to question her mother, whose complexion had turned white with spooked guilt. I got out of my car and said, I need you to pack your bags and get the fuck out of my house, she said as her mom feigned complete ignorance to the indecent infraction. In her state of panic, she said, your grandmother knew about all this, and I'm gonna call her, you'll see, said Jane, who coldly retorted with, you know what you've done. Her mother ultimately copped to holding hands with the husband, but denied ever engaging in a full-blown affair. But Jane, who equated her mom's flimsy protest of innocence to a glaring admission of culpability, said their low-down and dirty dalliance was the most egregious offense, and said it was being kept in the dark about the inappropriate conduct by the matriarch and patriarch of her family. This entire time, my grandparents, who were like my world, who were there for me my entire life when no one else was, they knew that him and my mom were at least holding hands, and no one told me, Jane lamented. As the moldy cherry on top of her sadly sordid saga, Jane said her unapologetic mother later attempted to boot her out and onto the streets. She tried to take my house from me, the heartbroken Belle said, as a now single mom with failing health issues with no job, no career, nothing. Unfortunately, Jane's messy mama drama isn't all that unique. In fact, in November, an Idaho mom of two named Catherine virally claimed that her husband cheated on her with her own mother and revealed that it was her grandmother who told her about the affair. Later that month, an anonymous woman took to Reddit's ever-trending Am I the Asshole forum, alleging that her mother-in-law was guilty of committing emotional incest with her husband. Luckily for Jane, an overflow of good came out of her bad breakup. I started a nonprofit where we build tiny homes for single moms, she said, crediting the tragedy for inspiring her charity work. It's what started all this because of the betrayal, not having a home, my safety and security net being ripped apart and shredded, and not having anyone in my support system, she said. Amazing things can come out of horrible things. Man, a lot of this shit is becoming way too much like those games we cover, right? Husband, having an affair with the mother? Come on now. Okay, so I got a breaking news here for you guys, too. This one's actually really, really good. Hold on. No, we don't want to go to Purina Dog Chow. Damn it, these ads. I don't think anybody cares about Dog Chow right now. All right, here we go. So this is a breaking story. If it'll load, we're going to try to get it. Okay, here we go. I work in a brothel. Moms pay me to deflower their clueless virgin sons. This might be our headline. She makes the sun shine. A licensed sex worker revealed that moms pay her to take their clueless virginal sons out and then under the sheets for the first time. Ariel Little. Hold on. Is that Alice Little? Are you fucking... Hold on a minute. Alice Little from Coffee with Alice? Yeah, that's what she's doing? Okay, alright. So I agree that the incel problem might be... Is that how... I mean, should I clap for her? I don't know. Like, I respect Alice Little. I think she's cool. She's totally... like, cool with sex dolls. She was promoting the dolls. She thinks they're useful. She doesn't have any problem with that. She's also cool with, like, legal prostitution, you know, as a card and all that kind of stuff. That might help some guys. And, I mean, maybe, you know what? All right. Let me have a grim think on this. Okay. So... think about it like this. Maybe these moms are worried about the incel shootings that we've had, where the guys are like, I can't get laid, so I'm going to take out people. Which I was very, very worried about, because unfortunately, that was an issue. I work in a public place, and I have absolutely seen guys that act like this. Young guys, teenagers. And it is a problem. It is a real problem. They are unhinged, and I fear for my life sometimes. So basically, you know, maybe the mothers are like, all right, so we can get this professional woman to do all the things, and then my son will feel better, and maybe he won't take out people? I don't know. Like, I honestly, I don't know what to say. I mean, Alice Little is a professional. She knows what she's doing. I got a lot of respect for her, actually. Because she's one of those that understands the psychology of it. And again, if you've watched any of her videos, she's very down to earth. She doesn't act like a lot of these other ones that's like, oh, look at my pics and all that other stuff. It's a little different. I like, I've watched a little bit of Coffee with Alice. So I'm going to defend her a little bit. Anyway... they're calling her Ariel Little, and I think they're just... maybe she just goes by the stage name Alice? But that's definitely her, I know that. But anyway, she works at the Chicken Ranch. That's exactly where she works. 33, a legal licensed brothel in Powder Up, Nevada. But she also ventures outside the erotic establishment to offer her inexperienced clients a full wining and dining experience. See, that's fine. Moms are sending their sons to me ahead of Valentine's Day to get their first experience under their belt. This is kind of weird. Fascinating and weird at the same time, guys. She told Kennedy News. They're reaching out from a place of care and concern, wanting to make sure their kid essentially doesn't become bitter and negative towards women. Really? They get in touch because their kids have never connected with women for whatever reason. She explained that some of these men are introverted and never started their dating or sex lives. She welcomes mothers who book... Yeah, that's her. That's definitely her. What in the hell? What kind of Twilight Zone bullshit did I wake up to this morning? She welcomes mothers who book appointments with her for her sons so long as it's consensual and the person is aware that this is what they're getting as a present. Getting to sit and go out on a date is truly a first experience for them, so it's a little stressful and nerve-wracking, Little explained. To help ease these men into the world of dating, the sex worker will organize a practice date to set them up with the skills they're going to need to be in successful relationships in the future. I've had guys shaking in a mocked-up first date situation. For some of these gentlemen, they've not even had their first kiss. Man! It's really bad on these streets, right? I think it's really beneficial to have that first experience with someone who is more experienced because there's not going to be any judgment. I have a pretty good sense of how to get people to relax and overcome their nerves and set somebody up for the best time possible. What the fuck? She explained that she's noticed a lot of virginal men age in their 30s, 40s, and 50s. Reevaluated their priorities during the pandemic, deciding to try and have their first sexual experience. However, not all of Little's clients are virginal men. I see men of all ages, from those aged 21, treating themselves to a 21st birthday gift to men in their 70s, she said. The men in their 70s have lost their partner and don't want to get into another long-term relationship, but still want to have intimacy and a meaningful sex life, she further explained. Well, some of them just buy dolls, which of course she does support. Like, I'm going to tell you right now, she is a friend to dolls. She did not badmouth dolls. She's been cool about it. She's been cool about male masturbators, like this, you know, this, like similar to the spinning robot pussy. She's been cool with a lot of these things. You know, she's not like, ew, why don't you get, no, she's cool with torso dolls too. She's been doing a lot of, she's been doing some torso reviews, you know, like TFM does his, she does hers. And he's like, you know, that's cool. I don't have any problem with that, you know, because she's getting the word out. This is good stuff. This can help guys out. The dating pro also said it's rewarding to see how men blossom in confidence after meeting her. She revealed that they'll often keep in touch and follow up as they begin dating on their own. It's so fantastic to see these gentlemen grow in confidence and see the transformation. Little shared. This article basically mostly establishes that women-led households cannot raise boys to become strong men. A generation of weak men is exactly what you would expect in a society that celebrates single motherhood to such a great extent that even in situations where the woman actually gets married before birthing a son, the father generally gets shut out of the son's life in the event of a divorce. Let's see. Well, one person says Peterson's not doing a good enough job with the incels today. She provides a much-needed service. I agree with that. I'm giving this man a thumbs up. And I'm also giving the first man a thumbs up. Don't worry, the guy that said, you know, the woman-led household thing. I agree with that. All right. Let's see here. What else do we have to talk about? Did your ex give you a demon STI? And that, we're not even going to go into that. Let me look at this one and see if it's new. Yeah, this one's new. We should have gone over this one, too. We've got another one. New York Post really just has some interesting stuff sometimes. Gen Zers are now resetting their virginity, but they're very confused about how that works, doctors are saying. Gen Z is resetting more than their calendars this year. Looking forward to a fresh slate in 2024, Bevan Bay, 25, posted a TikTok video with a curious revelation. When my virginity resets in a couple days, Bey captioned a clip of him lip-syncing to Nicki Minaj's song Old Body, which includes the provocative lyrics, "You ain't fucked me, you fucked the old body." Bey had scrolled past a similar video on TikTok and decided to recreate the clip to make his friends roll their eyes and laugh. But he isn't really joking. Bey is co-signing her crass statement in an attempt for a serious reset by reclaiming his long-lost virginity. He's one of many Gen Zers who are redefining virginity and rejecting judgment of their sexual history in a bold way. The 25-year-old explained to the Post that he's not ashamed of his past sex life, he just doesn't really care about it. The internet has allowed Gen Z to become more aware and more educated about sex, Bey told the Post, claiming that many in his generation have learned that virginity doesn't really matter. Despite schoolyard rumors of pop cherries and stretched vaginas, virginity has no medical or scientific definition. The whole concept of virginity is something that Gen Z feels very confused about, Dr. Emily Jamia, a certified sex and relationship therapist, told the Post. According to Merriam-Webster, a virgin is a person who has not had sexual intercourse, meaning penetration must occur. That presumably means Gen Zers are eternal virgins if they can enjoy sex without it, which can be an odd parameter to ponder. Especially true for members of the growing LGBTQ sandwich community. Virginity really is a construct. Jimmy explained, it's not something that you can test for, so the argument is if virginity is a construct, someone can decide whether or not they are one. As some Gen Zers are deciding what actually is and isn't sex, others simply don't think their sexual history matters, including the pop singer Lil Nas X, who publicizes statements to his sentiments to 7.8 million ex-followers at the beginning of the new year. On January 1st, the sexed up 24-year-old musician tweeted, "It's 2024, meaning all of our body counts have reset to zero." And although presumably a joke, the idea struck a chord with some. Oh boy, I go back down to zero! Dr. Lee Phillips, a psychotherapist and certified sex and couples therapist, told the Post that several of his Gen Z clients have mentioned the star's tweet and consulted him on wanting to reset their body counts. What? Or the number of people with whom they've had sex. They're trying to... What are they doing? Can I just reset my body count? No! The whole human... Whatever. It just threw up an ad at that moment. And you know what? I think I'm done. I think I'm done with that. It's absolutely fucking... stupid. Absolutely fucking stupid at this point. Hold on. Now, I don't know what the hell's going on. Let's erase our body count. Let's have our young men get with this prostitute, even though she's one of the better ones. It's getting bizarre. It's really getting crazy. I don't know what's going on with people. Are we gonna make it? Why so many tolerant people are actually the opposite? Another intellectual takeout. It's become common to point out that those who preach tolerance are often themselves highly intolerant. But why is that? As University of Texas professor and ethics expert Jay Budzuski explains, it may have a lot to do with tolerance's character as a virtue. Let me explain, or rather, I'll explain Budzuski's explanation from his excellent article, The Illusion of Moral Neutrality. This explanation involves three steps. 1. Tolerance is a virtue. A virtue is a behavioral disposition that lies between the extremes of deficiency and excess and assists one in pursuing the good. Despite the messiness in its application today, authentic tolerance is a virtue through which one puts up with something in order to, in the words of Budzuski, either prevent graver evils or advance greater goods. I believe that. Thus, for instance, we may tolerate someone voicing a wrong opinion because suppressing it, 1, could lead to further more insidious suppressions of free speech, or 2, could eliminate the chance for truth to shine through when pitted against error. According to Budzuski, the extremes to be avoided in exercising tolerance are soft-headedness, putting up with something we should suppress, and narrow-mindedness, suppressing what we should put up with. The virtues are independent. This is number 2. A tradition that traces back to Thomas Aquinas, Arcanus, whatever you want to say, holds that all of the virtues are dependent on each other. But Suzuki explains that for every moral virtue depends on practical wisdom. Hence, if practical wisdom is impaired, then every moral virtue is impaired. But on the other side, practical wisdom depends on every moral virtue. Hence, if any moral virtue is impaired, practical wisdom is impaired. It follows then that through practical wisdom, a flaw in any moral virtue entails a flaw in every other. To summarize, practical wisdom refers to prudence, the virtue of determining the right course of action in each situation. If one is missing this virtue, then one cannot know how to properly perform virtues such as tolerance in a balanced manner, and vice versa. If one doesn't know how to be properly tolerant or temperate or just, then it means that the person is not prudent. 3. People aren't being formed in the virtues. A big problem in society today is that the virtue of tolerance is often isolated and promoted apart from traditional virtues such as justice, temperance, courage, and of course, prudence. The result is a society populated by many people who extol tolerance but who lack the wisdom necessary to avoid the extremes of soft-headedness and narrow-mindedness described above. Those who fall into the latter extreme of suppressing what could be put up with are the so-called tolerant people who are actually intolerant. But Suzuki warns, we cannot compensate for the collapse of all our virtues by teaching tolerance and letting the rest go by, as some educators and social critics seem to think the only cure for moral collapse is moral renewal on all fronts simultaneously. We have a lot of work to do. A version of this article was first published in 2017. Very interesting food for thought there. Okay, we've got Bounding Into Comics. Yakuza franchise producer Masayoshi Yakayama says he's worried about violence in video games. No shit, guys. It is imperative to think about the effects that this can have on the players. And doing his best impression of a reactionary 1990s-era American politician, Masayoshi Yakayama has admitted that, though he has no explicit proof to the fact, he believes that violent video game content is detrimental to the mental capacities of players across the board. Yokoyama, whose tenure with the franchise has seen him serve as a writer and producer on every entry save Dead Souls and the Project K duology, shared his thoughts on the topic of video game violence while speaking with the Japan Times regarding the difference in development philosophies between the Yakuza and Grand Theft Auto video game series. Beginning with a direct comparison between the two, Yokoyama recalled to the outlet's Matthias Sina that when it came to Yakuza's design philosophy, rather, from the start, we decided not to have a game where you can hit people yourself. All fights start with a provocation from the opponent, and Hero never hits women. That's an absolute rule. Our approach is the opposite of GTA, he added. It's a completely different game. And further detailing the differences between the two open-world series, the producer then explained, from the beginning with Yakuza, we targeted a purely Japanese audience who actually go there, and we wanted them to say, ah, yes, that's how it really is. GTA offers a very large map where you can act freely, he detailed, but in Like a Dragon, the franchise's original Japanese name, you operate in a tight and dense space where you enjoy a story. It was here ostensibly, thanks to its general relevance to both franchises, that Yokoyama turned to directly address the topic of violence in video games. Noting that his concern over such content stemmed from those moments when you see mass shootings on TV and you learn that the author was playing at home, the producer then opined, it's a very complex problem, but I think we can't say that video games don't have an influence, because unlike a novel or film, they allow you to have an immersive experience. So I think that when creating video games that contain violence or Yakuza stories, it is imperative to think about the effects that this can have on players, he further declared. To this end, Yokoyama then explained that, in deference to the supposedly harmful effects these stories could have on the players, the plots of the Yakuza series have gradually moved away from purely Yakuza themes to focus on social issues, and the story no longer only concerns the underworld. Having the word Yakuza in the English title harms sales in Japan, the producer detailed. Japanese society is getting tougher and tougher towards Yakuza. In the past, we could talk about it on television, but it's become a taboo word. As noted above, despite making this claim, Yakayama presented no concrete evidence to support his claim that fictional media is influencing audiences to commit unsavory acts. And that's likely for one simple reason. It doesn't actually exist. While numerous studies have claimed to have found a link between violent video games, and likewise behavior, most notably those published by the American Psychological Association in 2000 and the U.S. National Institute of Health in 2019, it should be noted that these results often draw a causal relationship between the two simply based on whether or not an individual played video games and was aggressive, with no concern for other such outside factors such as genetics, environment, or actual time spent engaging with the content versus the level of aggressive behavior. However, as the old adage goes, correlation does not imply causation. Rather, it's conversely positioned in a separate study published by Stetson University professor and co-chair of psychology, Christopher Ferguson and his team in 2019. While results did suggest, however, that the interaction between aggressive personality and violent video game exposure is predictive of violent crime, given that video game exposure does not have a direct effect on criminally violent behavior or aggressive personality, but aggressive personality, both directly and through an interaction with video game exposure, does predict violent crime, this is suggestive that some aggressive individuals are actively seeking out rather than passively modeling examples of violence. These results call into question whether a person's propensity toward violent crimes can be predicted based on their direct exposure to violent video game play. Although such a relationship would not necessarily have been causal, these results refute that players of violent video games can be categorized as being prone to violent criminal acts, they added. Instead, some aggressive individuals may be influenced to commit violent acts through a combination of biological and family violence exposure factors, and may also choose to play violent video games, perhaps using these as a stylistic catalyst. The influence of the arts on the immoral actions of individuals, whether violent, sexual, political, or religious, has likely always inflamed public opinion. The team ultimately concluded, yet one generation's violent media becomes the next generation's literature, and our fundamental biology, innately aggressive as it sometimes may be, continues. So, Apple Vision Pro buyers are upset to discover that VR porn does not work, and it has a chastity belt built into the device. Oops. So, Denise Richards had nipple negotiations for that saucy Wild Things scene, and she hopes to God that her children won't see it. Interesting. Henry Cavill says he's heading up the Warhammer 40,000 cinematic universe as the greatest privilege of my professional career. Also about Cavill, slight rant to end this. Cavill has talked about that he doesn't like the idea of a lot of sex in television shows. Now, let's be really clear on this. The reason why I said TV shows is a lot of people thought it meant games and movies and everything else. He was talking about that he didn't like the idea of it in a lot of media. However, one study purported that sex in movies has gone down about 80% in the past number of years. It's just not as prevalent as it used to be. However, sex in TV has ramped up. There are several shows now that are pretty much like softcore porn. A lot of them. And it's not something that we're used to. What in the world is going on with this? Oh, I'm not worried about that. I don't know why it keeps going off. But anyway, a lot of people were like, I agree. We need to get all these crazy sexy scenes off the TV. And I don't agree with that. I think that an individual should have the right to choose. So, what I'm saying is, look, in some AVNs, you have the choice whether to have sex with certain characters or not have sex. So, you know, they film so many hours of footage for these television shows, right? So why can't they just have, you know, footage left over where the character says, no, I'm not interested, and the sex isn't had. I know that sounds crazy, right? But basically, I'm saying that people need to be given a chance to basically decide for themselves whether or not they want to see sex scenes. And it can be as simple as a choice in a game. Let me get rid of that. There's something going on here. I'm going to kill that. I guess we can close that window, right? There we go. That'll stop it. But anyway, as I was saying, there's, you know, there was a thing that they did with, what was it called? Black Mirror, where they had Bandersnatch. And Bandersnatch was kind of like an AVN or an FMV game, where you could actually pick the moves that the characters made. And I'm like, okay, so I'm not saying we need to have everything completely interactive to where you get to pick the story, even though that would be awesome. What I am saying is, people should have the ability to say yes or no to certain scenes. Certain scenes, you know? Like, there's a scene where the characters have sex. And again, he clarified that the sex needed to have a narrative purpose. I agree. I think that, you know, sex in AVNs where characters are really close, it means something. Especially if it's passionate and well-written, like in Chasing Sunsets. A lot of that sex kind of brings the characters a little closer together, and you can see that. It's so well written that you can discern that easily. But if it's just fucking to be fucking, like, it doesn't really need to be there. So what I'm saying is, they need to have an ability for people that just don't want to see needless and without purpose sex scenes, you know, to just cancel it. To where it's like, these two are about to have sex. Do you wish to see this scene, or would you like to see an alternate scene? And you go, boom, alternate scene. And you're like, well, you know, on second thought, maybe we can just do something else, or we'll think about this another time. And they're like, all right. And then they go to the next scene in the show, right? And then you don't have to see that. Or you see this other one. Okay, well, these two are about to have sex. Do you want to see it? Nope. Okay. I mean, it'd be a little hard, though, because some scenes actually start with characters having sex that you don't know are having sex. Like, for instance, like, you have the big boss man and some chick is, like, sucking his dick and you're like, but he's like, argh! You're like, hold on. I don't want to see this. I even know who this person is. So it's going to be hard. I mean, are they going to have like a menu that says the next scene contains a sexual act between two people that haven't been introduced yet? Do you want to skip the scene and throw an alternate scene? I mean, people should be able to do that. It's not necessarily censorship because people have the choice of choosing different scenes. It's like, okay, I want to see one without the sex, or I want to see one with the sex. I mean, it doesn't change the narrative at any. You know, they can redo these scenes a million times. You know how many times actors have to say their lines over and over and over again, right? So they just change that up. It's not hard. It's really not difficult. But it means that the Warhammer adaptation will definitely not have a lot of sex in it. And that's what Cavill is spearheading. He's 100% for that Warhammer stuff. He is Mr. Warhammer right now. He started painting miniatures, and now he's literally bringing the Warhammer franchise to the world. And I'm scared to death. But we'll see what happens, right? You know, maybe cool things. You know, I got faith in Cavill. But at any rate, this is the Grim Lord, and we will see you guys next time on the Grim Rant Show with more articles. See you later. Enjoy the decline.